This is the Greg Bedard Patriots Podcast with Nick Cavins.
Watching this podcast, Bedard looks like he's in the middle of video gaming. I'm trying to get him away from the video game screen to talk some Patriots as he's down in Orlando hanging out with the rest of the peeps in the local media. Before we get into this bad boy, I want to remind you this episode brought to you by Prize Picks, the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. Download the app today. Use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. And do us a favor. If you like the pod, want to support it, go over to Prize Picks and sign up using that code CLNS, and it will help us tremendously. All right, Greg, you got up bright and early this morning to meet up with Gerard Mayo, and Gerard Mayo had a lot to say to you guys. Let's play a little true or false game.
Okay.
Let's start with this, because Mayo began with free agency talk. Big ticket free agency, right? Big ticket free agency for the Patriots this offseason was Calvin Ridley or bust.
Sure sounded that way to me. I know there's been some talk about other people, and I know there's talk about L'Jarius Sneed, that the Patriots made a call on L'Jarius Sneed. I expect the Patriots to call on everybody. You know, people have heard us talk about this before. It's called due diligence. And you know, if you are any sort of front office, you call about everybody because you never know. And you need to know the market for different positions and what have you. But yeah, it sure sounded like from what Gerard said about how like this really wasn't a good free agency class for offense. They went after Ridley. Sounds like they thought they made a very competitive offer. The Titans got a little bit crazy with $50 million guaranteed, which is second only all time to Tyreek Hill. Yes, I would say that's true, that it was Calvin Ridley or bust as far as free agency. We'll see on the trade front.
Ah, you lead me into my next true or false. The Patriots, Greg, will do everything they can to trade for a wide receiver one by June.
Everything they can. I don't think everything they can. I think they would like to do it. It's possible. It depends on what happens in the draft, what kind of guy. I mean, maybe they trade down and they think, one of the, like, Roma Dunze is there, or, you know, Malik Nabers happens to be there. You know, something crazy happens and they decide this guy's the best guy on our draft board. Then maybe they don't do anything. But besides that, if they don't do that, and they only come out of the draft with, say, a second level wide receiver, then I'd say the odds are pretty good that they trade, but they're not going to go over the top for it. It's going to be something that's prudent for them.
All right, let's get back to the free agency thing for a minute. You know, Mayo discussed not having magnet players, and he mentioned Tom Brady, and it's something that you and I have talked about, Greg, and a lot of people have talked about that. When you're trying to sell this situation, it ain't a sexy sell to free agents. True or false, recruiting was tougher than Gerard Mayo and or Elliot Wolf anticipated?
I would say that is at least somewhat true. Again, it comes down to if you really want a player and you offer him the bag, you're going to get the player. I don't care who your quarterback is. I don't care what your NFLPA grade is. I don't care who your head coach is. I don't care what your record was last year. If you're the Titans, look, I would like to live in Nashville. I would like to have no state income tax. But they're not a sexy team, coming off of last year. And they got Ridley. Why? Because they offered him $50 million guaranteed. I would say that's... it's a tough sell at this point, but all it takes is 1 year. And this is very similar to, the Packers. And not to keep going back to the Packers, but I do think it's apropos here. People don't understand. They especially the younger fans, they see the Packers now and they think Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, Lambeau Field, the atrium, it's packed. It's all this stuff. And the Packers are cool, even though it's the frozen tundra. When Ron Wolf got there, it was not like that. It was like they had been to the playoff one time in 20 years. The stadium was half full. They were still playing two regular season games and a preseason game in Milwaukee. The Lambeau Field was not cool. It was like Foxborough Stadium. And, you know, Ron Wolf went from 4-12 to 9-7, and they went 9-7, and guess what? They got Reggie White to come to sort of change everything in their second offseason. So I do think a lot of that stuff is limited, and I don't think it's really, you know, reality. It's nice to talk about for sports talk radio hosts, but I don't think it's reality. It's just the best offer is going to win.
All right, so the current roster right now, this is something that made me irritated. I was annoyed by this from Gerard Mayo today.
Okay.
I thought it was his biggest swing and miss. He was asked about the roster and whether or not this current roster is 100% ready to support a rookie quarterback, the roster and the coaching staff. And Mayo said, yes, 100%. Greg, true or false, is this roster, as it currently stands on March 25th, ready to support a rookie quarterback?
No. I would say that's false. I think my inclination being there and talking to him, I think it was more about the coaches. I think he feels really good about Alex Van Pelt, about Ben McAdoo, T.C. McCartney, Scott Peters, and talking, you know, Mike Giardi went around to some of the other coaches, including Kevin Stefanski, who was really complimentary towards Alex Van Pelt. And it sounded like that thing was not Stefanski's decision. It was ownership's decision to separate from Alex Van Pelt. But I think he got more caught up in the coach aspect of it. And I do think he thinks that they're really good. And I think he maybe willfully ignored the personnel part of it, but there's no question. Like, this is not the same situation that, like, say, Caleb Williams is going in through in Chicago.
Yeah, not even close, really. When you look at receiver, when you look at what they've done with that offensive line, it's interesting, though, because, you know, the one thing that you've said recently, Greg, is you're a little sketchy on the coaching side. You feel okay about the personnel side, but you don't feel as good about the coaching side. Is this Gerard Mayo just smoking his own good stuff and looking around and going, you know what, we put a staff together that's going to be awesome?
Yeah, it could be, Nick. I do think, you know, talking to some people here, I do think there's a very high opinion of Alex Van Pelt, and they just think for whatever reason he hasn't gotten his chance to be the play caller, to be the offensive coordinator, to run his own shop. And I do think there's a lot of truth in what you said, Nick, about like him basically like hoping against hope that, yeah, you know, I got the 12th guy that I interviewed and like, yeah, he's going to work. But I really don't know. And it was good to hear Gerard today, at least to even admit, like, am I going to be a good head coach? I don't know. I think I'm going to be. And same, you know, with Alex Van Pelt. So at least they're being honest. I just think the personnel guys are more of a known commodity in the background that they come from. I think that Mayo and Van Pelt and the offensive guys are more of an unknown.
Let's jump to the draft. Patriots, Gerard Mayo talked a lot about that third pick, talked about keeping it, talked about trading out. The Patriots, true or false, likely to trade out of three.
False. And I'm not saying they're going to definitely stick at three, but I just think a lot of the talk today from Gerard about trading down and the best way to, you know, have a successful team is to get more draft picks. So you know, and that's a Ron Wolf thing. Ron Wolf very much believes in that. If people listen to our podcast the other day, when I talked to Tom Silverstein, he brought that up and that he said that he would not be surprised if Elliott didn't trade back a bunch of times in this draft. Now, maybe not at number three, but maybe in the second round, you know, what have you. But, I didn't take what he said today as any indication of anything. I think he went in with clear talking points from Elliott Wolf, from Alonzo Highsmith, maybe from the Crafts to say, look, there's no upside to us being like, we're definitely taking a quarterback at three or we're definitely sticking at three. Let's see. Maybe somebody gets crazy at the last minute and offers us a bunch of picks. So let's leave that option open because it could be very tantalizing for where we are right now.
All right, before I ask you this, true or false, I want to give the exact quote, the context of this, because Mayo was asked about Drake May, and he said a lot about Drake May. He said two things that stood out to me about May. Here's what he said, quote, May had a fantastic interview at the Combine. Brings a lot of energy. You tell he has that leadership ability. Also, the exciting part about a guy like May, there's really no ceiling with a guy like that. In saying that, when we're trying to put together this roster, I know a lot of people look at the ceiling, but you also have to look at how low is the floor. I would say a guy like May, he has a lot of room to grow. He's a young guy. Honestly, he hasn't played football nearly as much as these other guys, so that's definitely something we've looked at, but he's definitely going to develop, unquote. All right, Greg, before I ask you the true or false, I want to ask you if I'm reading too much into something. Actually, two things. The first thing is, why do you bring up the floor? There's got to be a reason why you bring up the floor. He didn't have to mention how low is the floor when he's asked about Drake May. He could have just said, you know, oh, look how high the ceiling is. Am I reading too much into it, believing that there's a reason why Jerod Mayo brought up the floor, and it's because he doesn't think May is ready?
Okay, but that's interesting because, Nick, I thought you were going to go in a different direction. I thought you were going to go in the direction of Mayo purposely did this to sandbag May a little bit, so if they trade back, he might be available. My opinion of listening to him at that point, I would say that I took it as him just being honest. I think Jerod has a problem, and we've already heard him stick his foot in his mouth more than a few times in the few times that we've heard from him, starting with his opening press conference. I think he was just being really honest that I don't know who he heard it from, or, you know, maybe it was Elliott Wolf, some discussion after the combine, or, you know, they probably went back after the combine and said, all right, here's our initial read on the quarterbacks. And there was a give and take. I think he was being truthful. I think that, and this goes along with the lines of my initial evaluation of Drake May, is, man, he is a tantalizing prospect. He has all the tools that you want in a franchise quarterback, but man, there is a boom or bust factor to him where other guys in the draft maybe don't have that as much. And so I thought he was being honest that there's a lot to like about Drake May, but man, it's tough to know whether he's going to fully grow into that.
And here's what I want to ask you off of that. This has got to be like a consensus, right? I mean, you're sitting there at three. If you're going to draft a quarterback, that quarterback is going to be the future of your franchise. There has to be a consensus between Mayo and Wolf and Highsmith and McAdoo and Van Pelt.
He even said that today.
Is it possible to get to that consensus if you're looking at Drake May and in the back of your head you're going, man, but that's a lot of risk? All it takes is one or two guys in that room, Greg, right, to say, I love the potential, but this kid might puke on himself.
Yeah, I really agree with that, Nick. I think it's after hearing him today, and again, you know, we have to get used to hearing from Jerod and sort of learning the way he sort of gives out information. But my initial read was there's some apprehension about Drake May in the Patriots building as of right now. Now, could that change during the course of evaluation? Top 30 visits, Zooms, pro day, certainly. But I would say as of today, there's at least some people in that building that are very apprehensive about Drake May at three.
Yeah, so my true or false was going to be, are the Patriots wary of Drake May? And that is absolutely true, given what you just said. I also want to point people to something. Bucky Brooks wrote something recently at Fox Sports. You should check it out, everybody. He went through quarterbacks that were picked in the top 10, and he split them in like two different eras. It's like 98 to 2011 and then 2011 to present, I believe. And the main takeaway, again, there's a lot of good information in there, but the main takeaway from Bucky was there's one common denominator between quarterbacks that are picked in the top 10 that hit star status, and that is experience at the collegiate level. And that just kept coming back to me, Greg, when the second part of what Mayo said, he's a young guy talking about May. He hasn't played football nearly as much as these other guys. And I just wonder if that's another piece of the puzzle that would make them a little bit apprehensive selecting May 3rd.
Yeah, I would say that's true, Nick. And it sure sounds to me that the Patriots might be interested in May, but in a trade down scenario, that if they stick and pick, it could be somebody like JJ McCarthy instead of May, you know, and I'm sure we're going to get into that, but I think that there's, that would be, sounds like May would have to be a guy that is still available in a trade down scenario for them at this point. And look, that can change. It's not even April yet. Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into serious cash. Testing my skills on Prize Picks this season is the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 with just a few taps. This week on Prize Pick, I'm selecting Stephen Curry for more than 29 points, Caitlin Clark for more than 30 points. Yeah, you can cross streams, cross sports, all that stuff. LeBron James, more than 7 assists. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Make sure you use promo code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
The trade down scenario is an interesting one, Greg, because, you know, I know Alex Barth did a lot of work on this going back a month or two ago. The history of teams trading down to draft a quarterback is not a very good history. So
yeah.
we have to keep that one in mind. But let's stick with the idea of college quarterbacks in this draft coming up. Mayo mentioned five quarterbacks that he believed could have solid futures. Let me get the exact quote. Said when he started watching the quarterbacks in this draft, Greg, he thought it was a three-man race. Obviously, I would imagine he's talking about Williams, Daniels, and May. Now, after going to pro days, he says there are five quarterbacks they think that they could have solid futures. So if it is five, that leaves out one of the guys. Let me first ask you this. And the six guys we're talking about would be the aforementioned three. Then you add McCarthy, Bo Nix, and Michael Penix. If it is only five, do we take from the thought that they did not meet with Penix at the combine? They met at the Senior Bowl, but they did not meet at the combine. Apparently, they're not sending anybody of great consequence to Washington's pro day because Washington has the same pro day as UNC, and the big contingent is going to check out Drake May. I believe that's Thursday, the 28th. And then Mayo mentions that there's five guys, and he said he brought up visits as well. And that he did not mention Bo Nix or Michael Penix visiting Gillette Stadium. Are they out on Penix?
I don't know. It's hard to say at this point. I understand the stuff about the pro day, but everybody has to understand. And it's not just like a meeting at the Senior Bowl. I mean, they've seen Penix and Nix. They both saw them on the field at the Senior Bowl practices. I don't think either of them played in the game. Certainly, I think Bo Nix played very short period of time. Not that the game really matters. They both took part in the practices, so they've seen them live throwing. And they also changed the process this year at the Senior Bowl about interviews. It's not like the combine and like the speed dating, like 15 minutes. Jim Nagy, who directs the Senior Bowl, did a great job this year of changing up with the quarterbacks, how teams meet with the quarterbacks. So at the Senior Bowl, he would get a pod together of like four teams, and they would be closely aligned teams. Say, you know, Shanahan people, you could do with the Patriots, it would be the Patriots, maybe the Packers type people, that, you know, that type of thing, or perhaps like Nick Caserio. But anyways, these four teams that are somewhat closely aligned and looking for similar things, they would meet each quarterback for 45 minutes and quiz the quarterbacks and get them on the whiteboard. So it was much more intensive. So at this time, they probably think they have enough data on Penix. And if they need to come back to him later with a top 30 and like Zooms, I'm sure they'll do that. So I'm not ready to say they're out on Penix and Nix, but I understand why people might say that.
I think they're out on him, Greg. I know you don't care. I think they're out on him. How about that? Or they're running a great okey-doke, which you could never – I've been saying this on my podcast.
I thought about that today.
Yeah, I mean, you can you never know what's going on this year and what's going on this part of the season and off season. Greg mentioned earlier, you could be trying to tank the value of Drake May, so he falls to you at three. There were whispers today. I think it was Sam Weish on the NFL Network saying that he's hearing a lot of buzz about J.J. McCarthy to the Commanders at two. Like, this is the kind of stuff that we're getting now. So They could be running the okey-doke and making you believe they're not interested in Penix at all when they're eyeing him in the second round or at the end of the first round. We don't know. With that said, Greg, quarterback attributes. Mayo mentioned decision-making, competitiveness, toughness. Again, he also mentioned thinking that this was a three-quarterback class until he went to pro days. Now, the Patriots did go to Bo Nix's pro day, and Mayo went to J.J. McCarthy's pro day on Friday of last week. Are the Patriots falling for J.J. McCarthy?
I think that's true. When Gerard Mayo said that quote today about what, and I asked him the question about what he's looking for, and he said those things, the player that flashed in my mind was J.J. McCarthy. So that could be it. I mean, it really sounds like Gerard Mayo, probably after the Mac Jones experience the past couple of years, is like, I just want a quarterback that's going to take care of the ball. Like, that's all I want. And I think that's part of the reason why Jacoby Brissett is here over some, you know, maybe flashier guys like Justin Fields, you know, who gets sacked and fumbles and throws interceptions all the time. When Mayo said that today, what he's looking for, I just saw J.J. McCarthy in my mind.
We should also bring up that in experience, McCarthy did not play a ton at Michigan. So, Jaden Daniels is the guy that leads the clubhouse in the experience factor. It's very interesting to see how all of the – and we know this is going to happen, Greg. It happens every freaking year that we go into the draft and it's like February. And everybody starts talking about it and paying attention to it. And at the beginning of February, late January, it's – these guys are at the top. And then inevitably over the next month and a half, 2 months, we have the jockeying. And it's agents talking. It's teams talking. It's all of this stuff. So let me just ask you kind of an outside the box question. Looking at the quarterbacks right now, and this is only your gut, the top four guys. How do you think the Patriots rank the top four guys out of Williams, Daniels, May, and McCarthy? Take your shot.
After today. Williams, Daniels, McCarthy, May.
Interesting. All right, let's talk offensive line. Michael Wenu, he's going to play tackle. Mayo said he's going to play tackle. I thought, hey, right tackle makes sense on the right side. Could there be a surprise waiting for us? Could Mike actually play on the left side?
Gerard Mayo, I think if I was sitting, I was standing during this, but when he mentioned Michael Wenu and that he can play left tackle, my jaw just about hit the floor. Not saying that Big Mike can't do that, I've just never really thought of it, but I do think that's possible, Nick. It's much like the receiver discussion. It depends on what they do in the draft and who they get where, but I could definitely see a scenario after today where they start Michael Wenu at left tackle and they have second round pick DeJour starting at right tackle. You see this a lot with draft tackles where they start them at right tackle at least the first year and then they move them to left. And I'm not opposed to that. The more I thought about it, like, and we know that Mike is training to play tackle. That means he's probably trying to get a little bit lighter. He's probably trying to quicken his feet a little bit. And you know he's at least going to be solid. He's not going to be an all-pro or a Pro Bowler at left tackle, but he's not going to get anybody killed. And so, yeah, I think that is very possible going forward that Michael Wenu could be the opening day starter at left tackle for the New England Patriots.
My goodness. You're certainly feeling better about that option than I am. Look, you're already, and I know he's played some tackle. He played tackle last year. I get it. But it's already going to be an adjustment for Wenu to be a full-time tackle. He's already, as you said, he's got to train, you know, full bore for that thing. Then to switch him to the left side when he's been mostly a right side guy. Did he ever play left guard? I'm trying to remember. Did he play left guard at all for the Pats early?
Not for the Pats. I think in college.
Okay. So, I mean, he's been a right side guy. So you're not only asking him to move to full-time tackle, but then you're swinging him to the left side. I guess in the big picture, I know Mayo tried to sell Chucks Okafor also as a possible left tackle today. I guess in the grand scheme of things, Okafor's played two snaps at left tackle in his NFL career, but he played left tackle in college. I don't know, Greg. I hate this idea of just kind of juggling these two guys and saying, well, we'll figure it out. Like, give me a left tackle. Sign a vet left tackle who's played there. Draft a young guy who you can develop underneath that dude. Keep Owenu on the right side. Keep Okorafor as your swing tackle, and let's go. Don't give me this Owenu on the left, Okorafor maybe on the right, maybe on the left. Maybe it's a little too messy for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think it's because I'm so I have PTSD from watching Verdarian Lowe play left tackle. I'm like, oh, big Mike Owenu left guard left tackle. Hell yeah, let's go.
All right, let's jump to some other things here. Marte Mapu, this stood out to me. So Gerard said Mapu's in the safety room this year.
Yeah, and when you combine that where he said, like, you know, obviously Mapu has versatility, which, you know, I think that they love. He can play star cornerback, which is the, you know, Patrick Chung did it, not exactly a free safety type, but that Gerard said he can do that, it leads me to believe that he could also play free safety, and I think they will give him a look there. But a big thing is going to be, and this is what I always do, as soon as they start off-season workouts, the first thing I do is I just look at all the guys to see, are they bigger? Are they stronger? Are they heavier? You know, if Mapu doesn't gain any weight or gain much weight, then I think free safety, he has a shot at that.
I want to ask you a philosophical question here. So Belichick would really cross-train guys different spots. We all know he loved versatility. We'll talk about Miles Bryant a little bit later, who went to Houston today. He was really kind of the poster child for that versatility in the secondary. Some would say that's kind of spreading guys thin, right? Like you're going back and forth with Owenu, right guard, right tackle, right guard, right tackle. Mapu was kind of studying both, and you got a lot of quote-unquote hybrid guys in that secondary. Greg, do you like the idea of trying to pull out the most versatility of everybody, or do you like the idea of, hey, man, we think this guy can fit in this spot. He's best at this spot. Let's just keep him at that damn spot.
Mostly the latter. I mean, I understand the former, and I understand the benefits of it and game planning and stuff like that, but especially with young players, and Bill was really good about this, you know, for a while. Now, you know, guys like Miles Bryant and Marte Mapu, Bryant as an undrafted free agent, Mapu as a rookie, those guys were sort of the exceptions that Bill didn't used to do that. Like, I think that was more of a compliment to those guys, that Miles Bryant could play safety and cornerback as an undrafted rookie was unheard of in this program, and that Mapu could do both. It was really a feather in his cap, but I think you're right. I do agree with you. I think that it, considering how many guys they have back and the depth of this defense and the guys they re-signed and everything, like, start Mapu off where you think it's his best position and let him go with it. Let him fly. And then if you have to make adjustments from there, go ahead.
All right, we've got more coming up. First, I'll tell you, this episode is brought to you by Prize Picks, largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. Download the app today. Use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Also, check out Greg and Mike Giardi and others there at BSJ, $50 for the year. They do tremendous Patriots work, but also, obviously, we're getting ready for the Bruins, Celtics, their playoff push. So you want to check them out as well with Haggerty and Corrales. All right. Mayo delayed the start of the offseason by a week, Greg, with his coaching staff. Is that the right move?
No. Hate it. I understand his reasoning that he gave out today, where he talked about, like, before the players even come in the building, he wants to make sure he's on the same page with his coaches. Okay, I understand that. And I understand they've been busy, and it took a while to fill out the staff. but and now they're on, you know, doing the draft evaluations, and I'm sure a lot of time was spent just evaluating their own roster, and then it was free agents, and now they're in the draft. So I understand maybe time has been limited, but what the hell have they been doing? And it's not like Gerard is bringing in like a new defensive coordinator and a new scheme and a new offense and a new, it's just the offense. And Alex Van Pelt and Ben McAdoo have been together. They know what scheme they're going to run. Why are you just whiffing on a week of development, of getting these guys in and getting them into the playbook, especially the off? I don't worry about the you want to give the defensive guys the first week off. I don't care, you know, really. But the offensive guys, like, you know, get them in, get them going, because this is an entirely new scheme. So I don't think there's any time to waste on that side of the ball. And I just think this is a waste, and I didn't love the reasoning.
All right, let's get more from Mayo here. Mayo mentioned building it the right way. Did you take that as a shot at anyone?
I did not. I know that some people are taking that as a shot at Belichick. I think that, to me, the way that I took it was, and people have to remember, and I get a lot of chirping on Twitter about this, about, you know.
No. chirping on Twitter? No way.
Yeah, the Packer way, the Patriot way, boo, which one won 6 Super Bowls? Like, you know, that sort of thing. Like, but really, at its basis, the Patriot way and the Packer way are pretty similar. The way Bill Belichick built this franchise, and now look, you know, there were a lot of good players left over here. We've talked about this before, but he basically came in and he kept the really good players. He brought in sort of mid-level free agents, developed draft picks, drafted really well early on for a very long time, and that was the basis. The Patriots didn't really do a whole lot in free agency over the course of the dynasty, and I think that's a credit to Bill. And the way I took it was, you know, Bill, I took it as Bill did it the right way. He sort of got off course, and that can happen when you make mistakes, especially drafting, and it sort of tumbles on you. And they're basically doing a hard reset and getting back to, you know, what really started the great days for this franchise. So no, I did not take it as a slight to Bill Belichick. People got to get over this stuff. Like, you know, every time they say something, it's like, oh, that's a hit at Bill, you know, the dynasty hit piece and this and that. I'm just like, can we get over it at some point?
Yeah. When's the statute of limitations here? Like, what is it at the point when Mayo can just be talking about what they're doing as an organization with himself and Elliott Wolf, and not have to have it constantly compared or seen as taking a shot at Belichick? I agree with you, Greg. I've said this from the very beginning. You know, these guys have a job. They're asked about what they're going to do and how they're going to run things. And sometimes they're asked how they're going to run things differently than the prior regime. When you take over, you're trying to establish your program. And that's what you're selling. You're selling it to the media. You're selling it to the fans. You're selling it to the players. This is what we're doing. This is what we're about. And sometimes you do have to, you know, sit back and draw up some of the differences between you and the last regime. And I would also say this, like, I hate the game that some are playing, which is before Mayo was officially made the guy and before Elliott Wolf was made the de facto GM, there were a lot of people that were concerned and complaining about, oh, this is just going to be the Patriot way. This is just going to be Bill Belichick. This is just a bunch of Belichick disciples. So then when these guys come out and they try to draw some differences between themselves and Belichick's regime, they get killed for that too. Now they're taking shots at the prior regime. Like, you can't win. Mm-hmm. And that bugs me. All right. Gerard Mayo asked for patience from fans. Was that the right thing to do?
I think so. I think he had to at least send some message, because, you know, really up until he spoke today, it was sort of, you know, what the hell are the Patriots doing? Why aren't they spending money? Why aren't they doing what the Tennessee Titans are doing? And I think Gerard said, basically, in so many words, we have a plan. It's going to be methodical. There's no quick fix to this. We're going to get it right, so that we can keep building on this year in and year out, and like, you know, look, just have patience. Now, I understood what he said. I didn't love the parting comment where he basically said, like, let us do our jobs. Like, back the hell off and let us do our jobs. He would probably want to have that back and say it a different way, a nicer way. But trust me, as somebody who often speaks on different platforms, very rarely do I say what I really want to say. That's why I'm a writer. So I get to look at my words and make sure I place everything the way I want it. But I think it was the right thing to just say, you know, I understand your frustration, but just have patience because we're going to do this the right way and get the Patriots back. I didn't mind that at all.
This has already been a thing today, and it's going to be a thing, I think, for as long as Gerard Mayo, New England Patriots head coach, exists around here. There has been some pushback on Mayo from what he had to say this morning. There are some people that believe he just says too much. He talks too much. He says too much. He reveals too much. What is your response to that?
I think that, do I think that Mayo's tripping over himself a little bit in the early going? Yes, he has stuck his foot in his mouth. But I'll take that every day, all day, over the latter years, Bill, basically since Spygate, Bill. And I think that fans deserve to know, especially season ticket holders and people that buy the uniforms, they deserve to have some information about their team. And so, criticize it, again, it's these people that, you know, what do they want? They keep changing the goalposts on everything. I just think that Gerard's trying to be himself. He's going to learn how to do it in short order. And this is sort of what we talked about after his opening press conference and other interactions where I said, like, he's got to learn he's no longer Gerard Mayo, the franchise linebacker who can just say what he wants. He has to communicate with people. And I think it's a process for him. It's not perfect at this time, but you got to start somewhere.
Couple things. I was one of those people, along with you, I think, for the last few years saying fans deserve accountability. They deserve to know who's making the decisions, why some of those decisions were made, because they're paying their hard-earned money for this product. They're spending their time watching this product. And I thought there was, across the board, just a lack of accountability for the last several years by what was going on in the program. I am now not going to be a giant hypocrite and say, oh, well, Gerard Mayo's saying too much. Like, if you're going to bitch about Belichick treating the media the way he did and not saying anything, you can't have it both ways and come back and say, oh, well, now Mayo's just saying a little bit too much. That's ridiculous. It's disingenuous. Enough of that. Here's my other thought about it, though, Greg. You know who didn't prepare Gerard Mayo for this? Bill Belichick. This is what happens when the guy who ran the program, and look, we've talked about it. I'll throw my disclaimer out there so people aren't adding me later. I appreciate Belichick for what he did. I respect the hell out of the guy. He brought 6 Super Bowls to New England. He is one of the greatest coaches of all time. However, if you're gonna teach young coaches how to handle the media, Bill Belichick would not be the professor. He would not be walking into that classroom giving the guys bullet points. Mm-hmm. Gerard Mayo has been taught to be a walking, talking robot to a point. And so now he has to shed that and be his own man and have his own voice. So I think there's some of it, Greg. I don't know if you agree with this, but I think there's some of Gerard when he's talking to the media, when he's talking to you guys, he almost feels like he has to go a little bit overboard and give you a lot because he knows the frustration from the prior years. And again, it's one of those differences that you're trying to draw between yourself and the prior regime, and you're trying to be accountable. You're trying to talk to the fans, but you're almost trying so hard that you're going to overextend at times.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that, you know, like, for example, he was asked about Troy Brown today and, you know, his title, and basically Gerard said that he's going to be in charge of like specialists or, you know, something along those lines. And like, if we would have asked Bill this last year, he'd have been like, yeah, we'll see how it goes. We'll see. And like, we wouldn't know any of the titles until like the media guide came out, which is just utterly ridiculous. So I think Gerard's just trying not to be ridiculous about things, and just, you know, I think Gerard at his base really wants to be, you know, a good guy and just upfront about a lot of things when he can be, and sometimes he's going to step in it. But I think over the long run, he'll be fine at that part of the job.
It's a high wire act, man. You know, you and I talked about it, and it's not to excuse any mistakes that they're going to make. You and I will keep their feet to the fire if we're talking about a team by the time we get to minicamp that doesn't have some of these holes on the roster figured out. And if they don't play well, they don't get coached well, we're going to be all over them like we have been in the past when that was the case. But I do think people need to take a deep breath. Like, Mayo's had the job for a couple of months. He is replacing Bill Belichick. Guy was here for a quarter of a century, okay? A lot of success. And maybe we should give him a little bit more than a couple of months to figure things out. That's all I would say. Give him a little bit more of a fair shake before we start lambasting him about everything he does. Yeah. All right, let's end with this. Miles Bryant, he signs with the Texans. How will that impact the defense?
Good question. I see, you know, maybe it's Marte Mapu sort of fills that role. I do think they have a lot of, you know, options in the secondary. I mean, look, not at like starting caliber cornerback or stuff like that. I don't have my depth chart in front of me, but, you know, I'm sad to see Miles go. I think he was an underrated player here. Certainly people love to beat on him, but I just thought what he did as an undrafted free agent, his ability to play different positions, his versatility, I think will be missed on this team, but, you know, we'll have to see who fills that role.
Does this tell us, I know Mike Reese wrote it over the weekend, that for all intents and purposes, Miles was a Bill guy?
Oh, did he write that? Possibly. I mean, that they didn't jump at signing him. I don't think it was that expensive to sign him. I think, to me, that is the personnel department going, this guy's really not that good. And the only reason he was here because Bill loved him and he was his pet and undrafted free agent. Bill loves those type of guys.
I want to be fair to Mike Reese. He wrote this at ESPN yesterday. My read, talking about Miles Bryant, he said, my read, he lost a top advocate in Belichick. The Patriots would be open to bringing him back on a salary that reflects him more as a depth player than key cog.
So I think that's fair. I think that's totally fair.
Yeah, so that was Mike's read on it. And we should mention Miles got a one-year deal with Houston. So it's not as if he got the bag in any kind of way.
Right.
So it does seem like the Patriots were, hey, man, if you want to be a piece to the puzzle and maybe we can mix you in a little bit, then we're here for you. But if you think you're playing 75% of the snaps in 2024, that ain't going to happen on our watch. So it'll be interesting. You know, part of it, Greg, too, before we wrap it up, is the younger guys in this secondary, right? I mean, I was thinking about this today. I kind of have a developing opinion about signing a veteran for a cornerback too. Like, I would be okay with bringing Gilmore in. I've said that before. But I also understand this idea of we need to see what we got in the young guys. And you got Marcus Jones. This is a prove it or lose it year.
Yep.
You've got Isaiah Bolden, who had a pretty good preseason last year before he got injured, was out.
Yep.
You've got Alex Austin, who showed some flashes late last year. If you sign somebody like Gilmore or you trade for somebody like Snead, those guys are useless other than just being super depth pieces. So, you know, do you give it a shot and say, let's see what we've got in Austin. Let's see what we've got in Bolden. Let's see what we've got in Marcus Jones. Let's see what we have in, you know, what's his name, Jalen Hawkins or whatever, who just signed as a safety slash kind of special teams guy. So maybe that's just what they're going to do. Let's just see what we have back there, and maybe one of Austin or Bolden will pop for us.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, and that's really the way, you know, the Packers do things. And that's why, like, the Snead thing, it was nice in theory, but they have a number one receiver in Christian Gonzalez, like, I mean, a cornerback. You know, it's not that much of a projection. And so he's really good. Jonathan Jones is really good. Marcus Jones, we'll see. You know, let him prove it. And along with these other guys, and I'm sure they'll add other guys in the draft and undrafted free agency. So let the kids play. The secondary was one area where Bill did not really let the kids play. I mean, you looked at Marte Mapu. What we saw of him in training camp, we thought he was going to play all the time. He barely played all season because Bill just doesn't trust those guys. I think they're going to they're going to trust the guys or at least give them a shot and then go from there. I mean, Gilmore could be on the street. He could be a free agent forever. So they'll at least look in OTA, see what they got, and then go from there.
All right, that'll do it for today. Tomorrow, RKK, right? Scheduled to talk to you guys, or at least expected.
Mm-hmm. 8:30 tomorrow after the NFC coaches breakfast.
These guys talk after 9 a.m.? My God. What's everything before 9 a.m.?
People got to play golf and stuff. I don't know.
I was going to say, you guys do get the great weather, so I'm sure you're not bitching about it. All right, so
no,
we're done for today. We're back tomorrow, though. Greg and I will do this again tomorrow to talk about what Kraft has to say. Until then, he's Greg, I'm Nick. We'll talk to you later.